Welcome, where business buying banter meets no BS reality. Get ready to dive into the world of buying and selling businesses without the fluff and fancy jargon. Whether you're a seasoned business buying pro or a curious aspiring entrepreneur, this is where the real talk happens. Because in business, there's no room for sugarcoating. Let's get down to the brass tacks.
Hey, good day.
Hello there, Deb. How you doing?
Happy New Year, Richard.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you. I hope 2024 is a brilliant year for you and yours.
It's going to be.
Yes, amen to that.
We're just getting started. And I know many business buyers out there, aspiring business buyers, are hoping for a better 2024 as well. You know, as in, I would say, listings that are qualified and maybe a better interest rate market. But if the business that's qualified can afford today's cost of capital, that's not a bad business, in my opinion.
Yeah. And you know, we've talked about it before. I think people over-engineer the interest rates, just my perspective, meaning, yeah, they're high, right? And they're higher than they have been. When you look back over 25, 30, 40 years, we went through a period of, you know, zero interest rates or very low interest rates. That's the outlier. Having interest rates 5, 6, 7%, that's the norm.
Yeah.
With that said, it still becomes an increased cost of capital. So it's an adjustment of thinking. You could sit by the sidelines and say, you know, I'm not getting into it. The interest rates are too high, too much uncertainty. And those are the people that will always sit by the sidelines. So you have to go through the exercise and see how much more it's going to cost you. You know, I don't think you compare it. Let me rephrase that. Not how much more it's going to cost you. Here's how much it's going to cost me based on current interest rates. And how do we figure out a way to work around this in deal terms, et cetera? Because this is what they are. We don't know if they're going down. We don't know if they're going up. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, you have to embrace the uncertainty sometimes and not do anything reckless. But you have to march forward and say, okay, how do I make this work? That's it. I mean, if not, you know, go work for somebody.
There you go. And I think about the baby boomer businesses that are for sale. They've been around 15, 20, 25 years. I think they've been through a few markets of highs and lows, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And good times always last longer than bad times. So this is temporary. We don't know how long it will last people. A lot of people flip out when it comes to uncertainty. I get that. But you know, downtimes in the economy are always much shorter than growth periods and good times.
Yeah. And, you know, today we're talking about different banks, you know, the big banks, the small banks, regional banks, non-banks, community banks. You know, they all have different, I guess, different structures. And we'll walk through that on what the process looks like. Different rate environments too with some banks. And for the majority of SBA 7A loans, which is the popular tool to finance business acquisitions, the popular credit facility is the SBA 7A. Most banks offer variable rates on those loans because they sell off the guaranteed portion to the secondary market. And therefore, the rates are variable, which based on today's Wall Street Journal Prime plus a spread, you're looking at 11, 11.5% or so if you want to buy a business.
Right.
But then there's the big banks. I think back to when I worked for Wells Fargo. They did offer on good credit deals fixed rates. And these were the deals that they wanted to keep the liability, the loan on the balance sheet. So they could offer the lower interest rate, right?
And now when you have the ones that they sell off are typically the ones with the variable rate. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Okay.
And how do you find, you know, so an individual is looking to acquire a business. It's a big step for them. Mm-hmm. They've gone through the exercise, done their due diligence. They're satisfied with, you know, they're going to complete the transaction in their mind. Everything is, it points towards it being a good acquisition. So that part of the process, they're all good with, because this is, you know, it's an important decision for people. Mm-hmm. And how do you find it? Because the SBA will also offer some fixed rates, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when interest rates are rising and we don't know where they're going to be, or they're higher than they were, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years ago.
Right.
What do you find? Is there any specific breakdown between those borrowers that opt for variable rates? Because it adds an element of uncertainty, right? You, mm-hmm. if you look at all the economists, I guess in the aggregate, they'll tell you that they're eventually going to go down. Nobody knows when, but yeah. You know, for people that are taking a, or making an investment, it adds a layer of risk to them if they go the variable rate route.
And yeah.
You see any breakdown? What percentage of bars? And I'm looking at the lower end of the market, typical SBA type deals.
I love your thought process behind this question, because I think back to when I was working as a direct bank lender in 2020 and 21, when rates were, the prime was low. I think we were even had a prime of zero for a period of time, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So to buy a business at, you know, 3%, I mean, 2.75% were some of these interest rates when people initially purchased financed a business. That's all warm and fuzzy and feels great. And there were some large transactions that were on variable rates, Richard, where buyers were acquiring $4 to $5 million businesses, SBA 7A on a variable rate at 3%. So guess what happened 2 years later?
Why would they do that?
So, and the crazy thing is, Richard, there were decision makers in some of these loan shops that just swung on those deals. And yes, we're thinking in our heads, well, the rates will go up. I'm thinking back then, well, they're going to go up. I didn't think they would go up as fast as they went up. Because, I mean, right. Didn't your heart race a little bit in 2022 into 23, where it just kept going up and up and up? How do you think those buyers feel now from a 2.75 interest rate to an 11.5 today on a $4 to $5 million purchase?
Well, you feel pretty stupid. But, you know, when you look at it, if you take a step back and try to look at it objectively, when you lock into a 2.75 rate or even 3 or 4, I mean, you're just buying into the euphoria and not being prudent when you look and say, hey, I think people should look at some of this. I'm not going to tell people that they should go down the road of a variable rate or a fixed rate. Mm-hmm. You know, however, and it's when the interest rates are low, I think you have to have your head examined to not lock into a fixed rate, because you know what the business could afford. If you, and the argument could be made that when the interest rates are very high, well, you should lock into a variable rate because they have to come down. They don't have to come down. They may come down. It's more likely, I guess, that they will, but who knows the probability? Economists are wrong all the time. Who knows what can be around the corner, what could change things? And so what I think people need to do is just for the sake of, if there's not a big buffer between the debt service that a business can afford mm-hmm. and an increase, I think people should look at it and say, okay, if I'm very comfortable at the interest rate now, and what the business can afford, assume all things remain status quo. Again, I'm just looking from my personal perspective, I would lock into a fixed rate and knowing the business can afford it. Because imagine the scenario where you're in variable rate, the rates go up and mm-hmm. the business declines. Now you're really up a shit's creek, right? Without a paddle.
So- well, right. And I'm just because I lived in this environment working at these banks that offered variable rates. Most big banks would not swing on a $4 to $5 million intangible asset business acquisition loan, even with the SBA guarantee at 3%. They wouldn't swing. So the only places you could really get a fixed rate, Richard, were at the big banks, the banks that hold the receivable, hold the note. Most of those transactions that I call were financing blue sky. Financing air, right? We're just financing uncollateralized the name of the company. You know, there's no hard collateral. You're financing the employees of the business. Yeah, that's air. Not hard collateral.
Right.
They were variable rates, Richard.
Yeah.
There was no other option.
There was no option, right.
And banks do a stress test. They'll add 2% to whatever the current rate is on top of it to just give a buffer. But 2% is peanuts compared to how fast we went up from zero to what is prime today? I don't know, 8.5, 8.75, something like that.
Yeah, Wall Street Journal prime today is 8.5.
There you go.
And I remember as a kid, I mean, I don't mean to age myself, although it's impossible not to, but when I started my first job in 1981 and I was living in Canada, the interest rates went to like 20%.
Yeah. I remember that. You know, my dad, when I remember him telling me his first home loan, our mortgage when I was a little girl, he paid 19%. And you thought that was a good rate back then. That was like the 70s.
Crazy, right? My parents' mortgage payment was $87 a month. That was their mortgage payment. They bought a house for $14,500, made a little addition on it, like an extra peak. Cost them the general contractor told them it's an extra $300. My mother couldn't sleep for 3 days.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Today you got to add a couple zeros to that $87.
You can't buy the nails. Yeah. You got to add zeros, right? So, but it shows you that we go through the economy. There's no predicting it, and so, you know, one option that does exist for people, although it's not ideal, and you don't want to count on this by any means, if you buy a business and you choose a variable rate and your low rate and it starts to really skyrocket, if the business is performing very well, while there may be some penalties to get out of it, you can look at recapitalization of the loan.
Yeah.
However, if the rates are going up like crazy and you want to recapitalize it, generally the economy is, you know, has to be, the economy is in a little bit of a flux. And so it may be more difficult. However, it is a potential option, but you can't think about that at the beginning. You've got to make sure that you can service the debt, because if you have what we talked about earlier, that situation where your variable loan, the rates go up and the business declines, then that gap becomes really large.
Right.
And so let me ask you something. When you're talking to individuals buying up to a $5 million business, or even in the lower market, $500,000. There's options between, when someone's dealing with someone like yourself, there are options where they go to, there's the larger banks, there's the community banks, et cetera. Like, is there any advantage dealing with a smaller bank at a certain deal size or larger banks at another deal size? Like, how do you guide people? And is it tied in at all to deal size?
Wow. There is no one size fits all with any of the bank sizes to match any of the deal sizes. And as soon as you think you got it figured out, Richard, it's going to change again. That's the story of my corporate career as an SBA lender.
Of course.
When I worked for the big bank, the whole process was different. There were layers and layers that your file had to go through: processing, underwriting, you know, supervisors. The onion was a lot of layers to peel back to get to a credit decision. But if it was a really sweet deal and solid, you might get it yourself a fixed rate, but it might take you 6 months from start to funding to get that deal. And I had buyers back then that were solid and they were fine. They'll wait to get a fixed rate, but you had to be gold. Okay. And then, you know, you go to the middle-sized banks, the regional banks. They may be a little bit different. They don't have all those layers and layers.
Right.
This may be a boardroom decision where you bring your 25-page credit memo of your spreads and you present it to, you know, a couple of board members to get their enough yays to get the deal to go through. That's a whole different process. Then you got the non-bank lenders. They tend to move a little bit faster because they are all variable rates and they don't offer good interest rates. But in some cases, some people need to move fast if they want to get that golden gem business. The rate isn't an issue. Speed to funding is. So there's no hard answer to that, Richard. That's why I believe what you're seeing today, what we were talking about just backstage, a lot of direct SBA lenders are stepping out of working in one sandbox to be able to play in several sandboxes for their clients, right?
Right. And be able to, so they could look for alternate options for them.
Yes. Yeah.
And do you find, you know, what I'm hearing is across the board, you know, there's some activity that's down on the lower end of the market and businesses for sale. Clearly the leverage that's being offered on the larger deals has declined significantly. I think we talked about that last week, you know, at least from 3 to 4 times to 1 to 2 times. The SBA programs have not changed. I mean, it still offers unbelievable leverage to people, but I do see, and or hear, you know, activity is down. And I'm not sure if that's a result of, you know, people's concerns. I mean, we're hearing about a recession forever already, which it's, it still hasn't materialized. And I'm not sure the textbook definition applies, you know, to Main Street USA. Mm-hmm. It's if people just have less money to buy groceries and put gas in their car. That's, you know, they think they're in a recession. And they're probably right because it impacts them. Mm-hmm. And so, and with deals taking longer, I know for where I sit, whether I'm assisting buyers or sellers, deals have been taking longer over the last year and a half. How do you deal with, you have a buyer, they find a business, seller's on board, and then you have either brokers or the seller themselves that realize, this is going to take 90 days to get this financing into place. So mm-hmm. part of it is people have to start early, but mm-hmm. is there a different lag time now? Is it taking longer to get deals from your perspective to the finish line as far as the financing is concerned, once they've generally accepted, the buyer? When mm-hmm. I say accepted, the lender has generally accepted the buyer.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to answer that and tie it into this great comment that Ron Douglas put up on the board here. It kind of goes into it.
I'll put on my glasses so I can
read it. Yeah. Ron, our good friend Ron, talks about how he believes it's more about who you're working with at the bank. And you got to find a cheerleader who goes to bat for your project. That's where it's at. A knowledgeable front end SBA lender or an SBA loan consultant who sources the right project for you. That's what I do. That's going to be the cheerleader giving the orders to the business buyer and the business seller and the business broker of what needs to be done out of the gates before it's submitted to the underwriter. Once it's submitted to the underwriter and approved, another list of what needs to be done. And it just keep checking off those lists. And if all the parties listen and they're prepared.
Sorry.
I love it. That we need to see it to have her soundboard and put some laugh on that one. We just got the natural laugh from Richard. Is so true. They're all on board.
The parties listen. Yeah.
That's so freaking hard.
What kind of crack do they smoke where you're in Wisconsin?
Can I tell you, Richard, I have clients that engage me and I tell them what to do. And I can be pretty stern, but at the same time, I'm positively persistent. That's the better way that I put it. But the ones that don't listen, things go backwards because they took advice from somebody that's not the experienced SBA lender. And they didn't circle back with me to say, hey, Deb, the broker said to do this. Well, if I would have known that, I would have said, You're slowing down. You're getting in your own way. You're going to slow your transaction down. Like landlord requirements. We talked about that, yes. Right? Yeah. I mean, other people that aren't the lender will tell the buyers what to do. And then everything gets all effed up. I hate to say it. It is what it is.
And you know what? It happens on all points of the deal, starting from, on both sides. You know, broker meets with a seller, ends up getting an engagement. They start talking about it. When I have a seller engagement, I go through their team members immediately, who their accountant is, who their attorney is. I would say in better than 90% of the cases, they're not the right attorney and they're certainly not the right attorney. Often they are the right accountant because the financials are just the preparation of financials. But it's like we're going to talk about attorneys and they say, oh, I got an attorney already. It's my, and you find out it's their brother-in-law, the patent attorney, and say like, that has nothing to do with the transaction. We got to find you a proper attorney.
Yeah.
But on the buyer side also, everybody's in their ear. We talked about it before the show a little bit. They have all these people in their ear and it goes back to the root cause of why so many people fail is they forget to attach themselves to believable parties, mm-hmm. right? You're making a massive decision here, buying a business. If you go through it in the right way, you end up with a good business that's right for you and mm-hmm. you'll do well. But along the road, who your accountant is, who your attorney is, who's your lender is, any consultants that you may bring in, go to believable parties. You know, your sister-in-law is not the right individual to be guiding you unless she's a transactional attorney or has a lot of experience or whomever, friends, family, everybody means well, but they're all in buyer's ears. They're all in seller's ears and learning to distinguish about, experts from naysayers or experts from people who just mean well, but they have no, They have no credibility related to the deal. So they shouldn't even be, you know, commenting. Yet buyers and sellers are listening, or they run around the internet, get a bunch of bullshit information, or, you know, misinformation or inaccurate or out of date information, especially as it relates to, you know, SBA lending and the criteria that's required. And then they come completely misinformed, and you can't tell them otherwise. So they, you know, buyers and sellers have to learn to go, they've got to deal with the pros in the industry.
That's right. My philosophy is, if you're a business buyer and you need capital to fund that seller, the one you should be listening to is the one delivering the capital, working to get the cash for you, not all of the other, like you said, people in their ears talking right. about it should be this way, it should be that way. I'd like to circle back to the topic of our time here, you know, the size of the different banks, because I see a lot of comments in regards, is it better to go big? Is it better right. to go small? And it really goes back to what Ron Douglas said. It just depends upon who is your consultant, your SBA lender. That's the key, because you could call a big bank. And when I worked at a big bank, there were some darn great SBA lenders that knew stuff inside and out. But then big banks tend to hire, I should say all banks tend to hire just anybody to get sales in the door and bring in any kind of a deal. And then we've got inexperienced SBA lenders telling buyers, oh yeah, we can do that. And it schmucks up the system. I think about, yeah. you know, you want to buy a business, you walk into your regular bank that you just do your personal banking at, and you tell the teller, hey, I want to talk to somebody that does SBA because I want to buy a business. Well, they'll say, oh yeah, we can do that. And then they pass you to a personal banker. You sit down with the personal banker. Oh yeah, we can do that. But let me get you in touch with the SBA lender who covers 6 other branch locations. Good luck if they're going to call you back.
Yeah, right.
I mean, every bank is a different box of crayons. That's all it's the best way I can put it.
No, it's correct. And that's why, you know, getting with the right people. And I think it leads, you know, Raquel had a question, said, is getting a second, third, fourth opinion a good idea, or that lead to confusion? I mean, my feeling is you want to have surround yourself with the best team possible, but opinions are like butt cracks, you know, like everybody's got one. And so, you know, when getting second, third, fourth, find the best expert possible. And people also have, when it comes to lenders, what I've found over the years, the buyers have a misconception about banks. With this idea that they're going to walk into the bank, they're buying a business, has no assets, and they have no, and as a buyer, they have no track record. They may have a little bit of capital, but they think that the banks are just going to, you know, the teller's going to walk them to the vault, open it up and say, grab whatever you need and go buy a business. Mm-hmm. And it's not like that at all. It's very restrictive. It's only when you start getting into the much larger deals that you're able to get, you know, you get commercial lending. It doesn't happen at the smaller end. And so, you know, and to Ron's question that he posed or point that he mentioned about having experts in Racky's point is get the best people possible on your team. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should be spending a good amount of time vetting those individuals, whether it's advisors, consultants, someone such as yourself, an SBA loan consultant. I mean, that's the way you want to go, because they're the reason why someone is an expert.
Yeah.
Because they've been doing it for a while.
Oh, Lord. Thank you. That's been my career. And I went through hell and high water. I made stupid mistakes as a young SBA lender, and that's how I learned. And, you know, if there's one thing I want the listeners to take away today, as a business buyer, you should not try to swim in the waters of finding the right SBA lender to take on your transaction. Call me, because I'm just saying this because every transaction, every listing, every buyer, they're different puzzle pieces. They're different industries. There's different cash flows. There's different weaknesses. There's different strengths. Every bank likes this. Some banks don't like that. And here's the deal. When I call my bank lenders, the short list of the top ones that I know that are lending today, and yes, that could change next week because there's complete underwriting team turnovers where all of a sudden turn times are, you know, in the bucket, and it's going to take you 30 days before you get a credit decision. I know where to go. And when I call a lender, they pick up the phone immediately because they know what file I have in my hand is viable and going to be a transaction, whether their bank likes it or not. And if the bank doesn't like it, they're going to tell me right away so I can call the next three banks on my list to see what kind of appetite they have. And it's crazy. New SBA SOP policies came out. Some banks want nothing to do with it. Other banks are okay with it. Business buyers and business brokers aren't going to know all of that. And they're pegging themselves into just dealing with one lender. I'm telling you, over the years, business buyers that were told no probably could have owned a business for the last 2 to 3 years because I would have found somebody that would have said yes. And right. That's why I got out of playing in one sandbox so I could play in everybody's sandbox to help my clients find the funding. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually quite unfortunate that the buyers don't have the exposure to the information. And so they're looking at a particular business. They may be dealing with a broker or not. Broker has a favorable lender, said we can't get it qualified or you don't qualify. And they think that's the end of it. Mm-hmm. And around the corner, there's someone who potentially could. So it really lends itself to so many other points related to the business buying process, which is the buyer has to take control of the process. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, of course, they've got to bring the right professionals, as we've talked about to ad nauseum, but they have to take control of the process because if they leave it incumbent upon the seller to dictate, for example, here's the asking price. Well, the asking price has nothing to do with the purchase price. So if they leave that, you know, and they don't know how to do a proper valuation, or the broker says they're not going to do any component of, you know, an earnout, or here's the one lender that, you know, we can go see him, but you're not approved. If they keep allowing everybody else to dictate their future, then you're actually undoing the whole idea of why you're going into business for yourself, because you want to control your own destiny. Now, of course, they're misinformed, but you got to get with the right people. If mm-hmm. not, it's very easy to run. There's a great old proverb says, what's the use in running if you're running down the wrong road?
Right on.
And that's what happens is if you don't get with the right experts in every component of this transaction, and there's only a handful that you need, it's very easy to not get to the finish line. And that's a big reason why so many don't.
That's right. And I loved your words earlier in this last reply. You got to drive your own bus.
Yes.
I just put out a LinkedIn newsletter, and I actually have a picture of somebody driving a bus because that was my analogy. You have to drive your own bus because others are going to want to grab the wheel and steer it for you real quickly.
Real quick. Yes.
Yeah.
I see Pat, someone put up here, one of our wonderful folks at the back end said, Pat has a good question that she'd like to ask.
There you
so
go.
Feel free to post it, Raki or Sia, whoever you'd like, and happy to address it.
It's up there. What do we got here? Yeah, I'll read it and you answer. I haven't read it yet. Any fears of capital crunch for small regional banks in regards to a potential banking crisis? Yeah.
Well, someone mentioned that related also to SVP, right?
Yeah. Yep. That's right. Mm-hmm.
That would cause a little bit of alarm. I had a client on the West Coast that was actually crap in the bed after that, thought the world was collapsing, and it didn't happen because that debt was bought over, the accounts were taken over. I don't think any of that, those events, I don't think help things, but they don't usually trickle down quickly. The lower market is generally affected at a slower pace than the upper market mm-hmm. in business. So for example, when multiples are shrinking at the higher end, it takes a little longer for the lower end to be impacted. When deals are getting tougher to finance at the higher end, it gets a little bit more difficult. It happens at the lower end, but it just takes time till it trickles down. There is a credit. I think what's happening, or what I've seen, is that the lenders are just being more cautious. They're doing more diligence. The leverage has shrunk enormously. We mm-hmm. talked about it a bunch of times, Pat, where leverage was, you know, 3 to 4 times EBITDA before, and now it's 1 to 2 on the larger deals. Where it hasn't shrunk is with SBA lending. I mean, you could still leverage 9 to 1, sometimes get 100% leverage. And so that leverage at the lower market with SBA it's more attractive in those loans than any other segment right now. And so I haven't seen the credit crunch really impact or really seeing the credit crunch. Interest rates, of course, are playing its role, but it's not so much of a credit crunch. It's people's uncertainty. It's rising interest rates. It's difficulty with putting valuations together as a result of people coming out of the pandemic and not having a string of 3 years yet to show any type of consistency. So I think that's what's causing the gears to grind a little bit.
Yeah. And I would like to add, just based on what I know, some of the smaller banks, Richard, that really swung on those unsecured loans, 4 or 5 million back in 2020, 21, when the rates were, prime was zero, your rate on your loan was 3%. Well, now those same buyers 2 years later are sitting in 11.5%. So what has happened, a lot of the smaller banks that keep the unsecured portion of the SBA loan on their books, some industries, some businesses, the larger ones, starting to see some portfolio bleed, so to speak, where businesses are falling behind on making those payments. And what will happen, and another reason why you want to work with a business acquisition loan consultant, is some banks will say no to certain industries because they have too many loans on the books in that industry segment and they're showing some bleed. And this can even happen with franchisors. A certain franchisor may be starting to show some kind of a bubble as far as delinquencies and such. So that bank will shut down saying, nope, we don't want to take on any new loan requests. But I may know some other banks over here that will be like, oh no, we're fine with that, because they don't have exposure of that industry in their portfolio. It's crazy. It's ebbs and flows.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily crazy. I think it really points to the fact that people need to have the optionality of knowing that it's not one size fits all, and they've got to go somewhere where they're going to be able to fit their situation and match that with the right lender.
There you go. And again,
and that's why they have you, Deb.
Thank you.
And your immense talent.
Well, it's years of a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But even business brokers, if they're on the call, I want them to understand, don't pigeonhole yourself into just your favorite one or two SBA lending partners because you get paid a referral fee for sending the buyer to that banker. That bank may say no. And I've seen that where business brokers were losing deals because the bank said no. And then they called me. Well, no one else is going to get it done, but Deb, you can see what you can do. And then I found a way to get the deal done. Don't pigeonhole yourself into one lender just because you want more incentive. What's the ticket is to sell the business.
Of course, the commission is much higher there. I mean, you it's a bonus. You're going to get 1 or 2%, and that's wonderful. But you got to have your head examined to be focused on that. The goal is to get the buyer the money at terms and conditions that the buyers are comfortable with in order for that buyer to get to the finish line. So, they'd be far better served where there actually wasn't fees coming back to them, in my view. Yeah. Because then it would force them to either, allow the, they're not disallowing the buyer, but it would force the buyers to seek out all the best options possible.
Yeah.
But, advice to business brokers, and I've been, doing brokerage for decades, is forget about the fees. I mean, as a matter of fact, I remember it was a number of years ago, I didn't even know that their fees back, because a while they took away the fees. When I was early in my career, I never took fees. I'm not trying to present myself as a holier than thou individual, but I never took, because I'm not, but I didn't take fees from lenders.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want my buyer or the buyer in the deal thinking I'm pushing them towards any particular scenario because I'm getting a piece of it. I just think it's wrong. But again, that's strictly my perspective. That's not necessarily shared with everyone, but I think the larger point is the fact that if you're a broker and you have a couple of preferred lenders, if that doesn't get the buyer the money fast, then you're doing them a disservice, not allowing them to go out or showing them other potential lending facilities. I just think it's ludicrous. Yeah.
That's right. And some banks won't give working capital, others will. I mean, it's crazy. I think Sia mentioned there's another question to put up on the board, and then we'll wrap up the show here. I'll read the question here from Patrick, our good buddy Patrick. Do we worry about baby boomers moving to money market accounts and out of higher risk, unsecured or less collateral and tightening? Or is the M2 velocity allowing for capital to still rush into deals? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know what he's referring to by M2. M2, it sounds like a car. But so, Patrick, maybe you can clarify. I understand what you're saying about boomers moving money out of higher risk unsecured collateral. I mean, I'm not an expert in the financial markets, so anything that I've read seems to be the money supply. I don't see that happening at the lower end where we're talking. There's still plenty of capital available when you move up to the, and again, we're talking about capital related to the merger and acquisition world.
More at the higher middle market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, middle market, especially when you have the private equity players in, there's gobs of dry powder that has to be deployed. They've got to spend money. And so I don't think I don't see this happening where I play. I mean, there may be someone else who's has more expertise or more experience in some of the markets that you're talking about. But I know at the lower market, and when I talk lower market, I deal in businesses that'll sell for up to, the way high side is 50 million, probably 20 million, but sweet spot, 2.5 to 7.5 million, where I work as an intermediary. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that crunch. I see it just taking longer. The leverage is lower. But baby boomers may be getting more diligence in their investment, but I don't see it to that extent. I just don't see, but that's in the market where I play.
Oh, I'm glad you answered that. I'm Patrick. I'm more in the smaller business segment, anywhere from a business selling for 500,000 up to 5 million. So that's a little bit, it's different how you value those businesses, right, Richard? The small ones compared to the middle market ones.
Yeah, of course.
And that's where there's a lot of confusion. People try to value a small business based on the templates of the middle market companies and vice versa. And there's just too much confusion out there.
Too much confusion. And there's also, people are reading, they're reading information online or publications or seeing what public businesses, publicly traded businesses transact at, or a market gets very hot and it happens all the time. Certain sectors get hot and all of a sudden the multiples start to explode. And it generally does not happen in the lower market just because people have to get a good return on their investment and it's mm-hmm. more meaningful. People are buying businesses to generate or replace an income. And so, process of buying a business is actually very similar regardless of the size business, but some of the fundamentals in the deal structures change dramatically between, the lower market and the higher market. Deb, I know that she posted something about the special report, so we've done that.
Yeah, you want to put it back up, Sia, and you can speak to that, Richard?
Yeah, I think anybody who's considering buying a business or wants to understand what the landscape looks like. This is a report that I did and Deb weighed in significantly on the financing portion of the report. It's about 40 pages. It's a terrific document to help you get a very good understanding about items that a seller will not readily disclose. Doesn't mean they're doing anything fraudulent or lying to you, but it's just information that you have to explore and uncover oftentimes on your own to get to the bottom of, the root cause of things. And so it's really a good read. And it's put together based on, decades of dealing with buyers and sellers. And so I'd highly advise anyone to, to take the time to read through it because you're going to find it informative.
Thank you for that. And as always, we are here every Thursday streaming live on all the social channels at 2 p.m. Eastern. So just mark your calendar and show up and you'll find us live. Any closing thoughts for today? Oh, yeah. Our sponsors. Well, let's put them up. Let's thank our sponsors today. Brilliant Beam Media is our production sponsor. And for those of you business owners out there, if you're looking for any kind of help when it comes to social media presence, electronically, video-wise, text-wise, all of that stuff, scan that QR code. Sia and her team are phenomenal, and they will get you into a space that's going to lift your business for electronic presence. And then we have another sponsor. I'm going to be surprised. What, who is Sia going to put up for us today? walking tall movement. Two gentlemen and I believe a doctor, if I recall, they all work together in regards to supporting mental health awareness. Two of the guys that are the front of Walking Tall are victims of massive shootings. And if anybody has been through mental health, that would be who they are. And I always say those who have walked through the fire are qualified. Right, Richard? That's just
amen to that. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we've all walked through the fire of some sort. And I believe that's what makes us business owners, because we find solutions for those fires.
Yeah. It's a good analogy because we're firefighters, right?
Yeah.
Until we make that transition to stop putting out fires every day. Yeah, we're firefighters.
Yeah. And then Raquel, she is also another show sponsor of ours, and she has the Raquel Connections Corner show live every Saturday off the top of my head at 10 a.m., I believe Central Standard Time, if I recall. And there she is, just a beautiful gal. You scan her QR code and show up to her live show every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. Raquel has a wonderful following. It's growing every day. You really need to get yourself injected into her corner every Saturday morning, because you will meet some fascinating people that she puts in front of the stage on her live. And then,
she's like a bottle of champagne, just bubbly. Her personality is unbelievable. She's so positive. And I was telling her earlier, like, it's so nice. She weighs in, you know, in such a meaningful way on people's posts and commentary. I mean, just wonderful, wonderful human.
Yeah, she's very interested too in everybody's small business and what they do. She's always wanting to learn. And I believe when we all are like that, we want to learn about each other, we pay it forward. And that's what brings us to the Hounds business community. Yes. We'll put them up as the final sponsor of today's show. And if you're watching right now and you're on LinkedIn, listen, LinkedIn is a wonderful platform, over 9 billion users today, but you can get lost with 9 billion users. So sub communities, ladies and gentlemen, if you are looking to get further support, learn how to use LinkedIn to help support your business and presence, or just your personal branding. Listen, I was employed in corporate America my whole entire life. And the final 2 years before I left corporate America, I personal branded myself on LinkedIn because I wanted to prepare that one day I would leave corporate and go out on my own. Well, scan that QR code, join the pack, the Hounds of Business community led by Mike there. He's our redneck financial guy with the hat on. It's a great community. We all support each other and we pay it forward supporting one another on LinkedIn and also in another channel called Mighty Networks. That's how you network. I don't have to pay $100 and fill up my gas tank to go drive to a networking event and spend an hour in the car to get there and an hour to get home. We just network every day like this live on Zoom. How cool is that?
Yeah. And it's a very good point when you talk about networking, because people, maybe we should do a show one day on it, because it's so easy for people to get trapped in ongoing, never ending networking that leads nowhere.
Oh, I know. Right on. And you know what, Richard? I bet you Mike would love to get you on a Hounds of Business community show. He does an evening show to talk about what you do as well.
I'll try to pick up a camouflage hat so I could be a proper participant.
Yes. Well,
thank you, Deb.
Thank you. And it's always a pleasure. I feel right in the pocket when I'm live with Richard. You are a ray of sunshine. I enjoy your company.
Well, thank you. God bless you. You know, I live for you. You're always positive and encouraging and a wealth of information. And hopefully the people that could use your services take advantage of it, because they're going to be, they're going to be put in the right position, having you on their side. So again, I appreciate your comments, but it's right back at you. And I look forward to chatting again next week.
So ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the rest of the first week of 2024, and join us next week, Thursday, live, 2 p.m. Eastern. Perfect. See ya.
See ya. Bye, Deb.